We need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back Jack. And it is 4-1.
One high ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. Ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm there for
yo. And welcome back to the Big Sports Podcast, which is the realest and the sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life, coming straight from the south, going down right here, audio shop talk, right into your ear hole on the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com, brought to you by your homeboy, Joseph Ward, and we get on down like we're supposed to. Okay, yes, sir, and now, if you really, really, really dig Fix and you really a fan of Fix, and this is something that you enjoy hearing and you would like to continue hearing it and also see it grow and contribute to the Fix Sports Podcast growing, we're on Patreon now. www.patreon.com/TheFix, TheFix. Go to Patreon, become a patron, and, you know, your contributions will go to the Fix Sports Podcast, becoming a better podcast, growing, being able to do more as a podcast, as a media outlet, as well as becoming more of an asset to the community. So once again, if you want to support the Fix Sports Podcast, we're on Patreon, www.patreon.com, and it's going to always keep on going down. So, of course, you know, we're sponsored by On the Shoulders of Giants, and On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips, and on the go through the African History book series, the blog series, the YouTube channel, the African History Curriculum app, which is available in the Google Play Store. Just type in African History Curriculum app or On the Shoulders of Giants. You'll get that. The On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization, as well as classes, lectures, educational sessions, all those different things that you would need to learn African history. Just visit www.ontheshoulders1.com or www.ontheshoulders.org. Also, you're in the midst of the release, or you are close to the release, and it's coming, right? Well, you know what I'm saying. I'm about to release my third book, On the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 3, South America, which focuses on 12 individuals who are sung unsung heroes who contributed greatly to helping their people get free, as well as one culture, the Juka culture. So, man, www.ontheshoulders1.com. I'm bringing you the stories of the sung unsung heroes of the African diaspora in Volume 3, South America. My newest book that's coming out is focusing on the sung unsung heroes of South America. www.ontheshoulders1.com or www.ontheshoulders.org. Hey, man, we tell our own stories. Man, it's good to be back. I was trying to get at y'all on Monday, but internet, all these services and stuff out from the hurricane that came through, Hurricane Michael, came through and complicated a whole lot of stuff. And it's a lot of efforts. If you want to help some of the people who have been affected by Hurricane Michael, contact me. I'm going to have a link, contact link for this particular post, or you should be able to see that if you listen. Contact link, press that. That way you can get in contact with people who are putting together efforts to help those who are affected by Hurricane Michael. So if that's something that you desire to do, you can do that, because Hurricane Michael affected all of us. All right, so if I let them know how you know when you shoot, when you go, you gotta, if you wanna be somebody, you wanna go somewhere, you better wake up and pay attention. So, season 3, episode 9, and it's going to go down like this. Our HBCU spotlight will be shined at the Florida A&M Rattler football team for defeating the number one North Carolina A&T State University Aggies for first place in the MEAC. Because you know how it is. You know how we feel about A&T over here. We wasn't even trying to just highlight A&T last year, but A&T just kept balling. Is it time for Eli Manning to be replaced as New York Giants starting quarterback? Is it time for Eli? Because he got criticized by Odell Beckham. And everybody else looking at Eli and seeing that shit don't look good. So is it time for Eli to go? The NFL moves on from Pink October, so we're going to talk about that, because I noticed that. I was like, it's October, and I don't see no pink. Well, what's going on? So I had to look things up, and I'm going to tell you why the NFL is moving away from Pink October. Football player Nick Bosa of Ohio State is basically, the report said he's going to forego his this season to focus on healing his injury and the NFL draft. Bosa is regarded as one of, if not the best college players in the country. So they're not worried about him not being drafted, but they are worried about him not being healthy when he gets drafted. So, and our off-topic shit, we're talking about a man from right here in my own city, Tallahassee, Florida, some dumbass who traveled to Chicago. Listen at me good. If you ain't heard the story yet, listen at me good. Buddy traveled to Chicago to cut off the penis of the ex-girlfriend's new boyfriend because he couldn't take the fact that she wasn't with him. Oh, sucker-ass boy. The college football update, the NBA just started, all goddamn ready. They didn't give us time to really miss that shit, dude. So the NFL is back. NBA is back, excuse me. So I'll give you an NBA update. And give you an update on the Major League Baseball playoff race, the ALCS and the NLCS, or the championship series from the National and American League. The Boston Globe is doing an investigative story on Aaron Hernandez, so I'll give you some details about that, but a lot of it is why. Terrence Crawford just defeated Jose Benavidez, so we want to talk about that because he put the fans on Benavidez. Paul Feinbaum says Urban Meyer will leave Ohio State after this season due to health issues, so we want to look more into that. And Friday rant is aimed at San Francisco 49ers for their little soft-ass apology for leaving Colin Kaepernick out of a photo gallery chronicling the seasons that he was at the 49ers and, you know, taking them to the Super Bowl and taking them to two straight conference championship game. So, and they just decided to conveniently leave the man out of the photo gallery, even though they haven't had any quarterbacks since him to halfway be that good. Or yeah, before that, whether it was Steve Young. So, you know. Yeah, so we finna talk about San Francisco a little bit in our rant because, hey, you shouldn't have done it. Don't apologize now. But we're going to start with our HBCU spotlight, and you know it's going at the Rattlers of FAMU for that comeback win over the Aggies with a field goal. Check out the headline. Florida A&M tops North Carolina A&T, secures first place in MEAC. Yahia Ailey's 26-yard field goal for the with 4 seconds left, lifted the resurgent Florida A&M University Rattlers to a thrilling 22-21 Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference victory over the defending Black College and MEAC champion North Carolina A&T Aggies at Aggie Stadium here Sunday afternoon. Saturday's game was a classic, with the up and rising Rattlers taking the champs' best shot and dishing out enough of their own in close quarters to fight. To score the late round knockout before the national television audit. I wish I would have saw it, but my cable and internet was out. After the Rattlers had climbed to within 2 points of 21-19 on Ryan Stanley's 11-yard scoring strike, Chad Hunter was just over 5 minutes left, and they got a two-point conversion. Well, they failed the two-point conversion. The FAMU defense opposed their will on the ensuing Aggie drive, stopping the home team short on third down, forcing A&T to punt the ball away with just over 2 minutes left. Oh, shit. Starting the final drive from the 21-yard line. Oh, man. FAMU mixed in runs from Ricky Henry and Azende Ray, along with clutch passes from Stanley to Moore, to move within field goal range, running the clock down to 4 seconds before taking the timeout. And they learned a lot from that Jackson State game. Yeah. Ailey, who missed an early PAT on the Rattlers' first touchdown in the second quarter, nailed this 26-yard right down Wanish way to set off a celebration on the Rattlers' sidelines and likely all over Rattler Nation. Goddamn right. Saturday's game, billed by many in the NCAA FCS is Black College media realm, the FCS game of the week turned into an anticipated close quarters fight to the finish. The challenges for FAMU, who are now overall 5-2 and 4-0 in the MEAC, won their fourth straight game and tightened their grip on the proverbial catbird's seat atop the conference standing, now as the lone undefeated team in league play. Meanwhile, the vanquished Aggies, who are 5-2 overall and 2-1 in the MEAC, came in ranked number 10 in the Stats Inc. FCS Top 25 polls, dropped their second last heartbreaker at home this season, having fallen to the visiting Morgan State 16-13 in September on a field goal as time expired. The Aggies first drew blood, however, in the opening stanza, taking a 14-0 lead in the second quarter. Speedster Malik Wilson returned the game's opening kickoff for 100 yards for a score to give the Aggies a 7-0 lead. Senior quarterback Lamar Raynard then extended the Aggies' lead to 14-0 on a 38-yard scoring toss to Zach Leslie with a minute 18 left in the quarter. FAMU got on the board with a defensive score late in the second period. FAMU got on the board with a defensive score late in the second period when freshman defensive back Herman Jackson forced a fumble while tackling Aggie running back Marquell Wright, then scooped up the loose pigskin, raced 55 yards for a touchdown. So you get the strip sack and score. That's what's up. Yahia Ailey's PAT try failed, leaving the score of 14-6 with 4:45 left in the half. The Aggies answered the FAMU defensive tally with a scoring drive of their own, capped by a 6-yard TD toss from Rayner to Leslie for a 21-6 count with a minute 37 left in the half. FAMU drew closer to the Aggies in the third period when the Zende Ray capped the Rattler drive with a 5-yard TD burst. Ailey's PAT kick was good, cutting the Aggie lead to 21-13 with just over 11 minutes in the quarter. Score remained that way deep into the fourth quarter when the Rattlers mounted a 12-play, 66-yard cap by Ryan Sanders' 11-yard scoring toss to Chad Hunter, slicing the Aggie lead to 19-21 with 5:09 left. The two-point conversion try failed. Oh, shit, so it's on, not my. This motherfucking on now. FAMU's defense came up big on the ensuing Aggie drive, forcing A&T to punt the ball away with just over 2 minutes left, setting the stage for the dramatic knockout of the champions in their home field. Dum 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 da dum dum dum. And that, my friends, is how the Florida A&M Rattlers became number one in the MEAC, 5-2 overall and 4-0 in the MEAC, with themselves defeating the mighty, mighty North Carolina A&T State University Aggies. So from all the way at the Fix Sports Podcast, to your house, to your hood, and my man, a little shirt, and everybody else around the corner, y'all know what y'all got to do. Put y'all hands together for the FAMU brothers for the feeding and action. Harmonica style. Break it down. Eli, what the hell is going on between the sheets in your home? Eli, wait, let me explain. To say your ass is lame in the game. Oh, there he about to have a fit. Why? Because he ain't really catching shit. How could he get into this shit and never stay around with this bitch? You low down dirty receiver. Back the way you come from. Why come at me just like that? Everybody know Eli's trash. Shut up! Can't you see two people's talking? Don't I told Eli to get to walking. Now I think y'all better leave this place. Cause Eli's about to be replaced. He ain't contagious. He ain't making plays, bitch. He has got to go. Why should I leave? I thought I was bowling. Don't treat me like a hoe. Oh, Eli. So, OBJ criticizing Eli. Eli being criticized in the media by the analysts. Eli ain't bowling this year. The New York Giants right now have got off to a bad start. And, you know, Y'all know Odell, you know, y'all know he different. So, yeah, let's read what he had to say. New York Giants wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. had a few things to get off his chest Sunday. Beckham had a couple critical things to say about the Giants during a wide-ranging interview with ESPN's Josina Anderson on Sunday, which I missed because the cable was out. Beckham already raised some eyebrows after ESPN teased a portion of the interview Friday. On Sunday, things got worse. The 25-year-old wide-eyed was critical of pretty much everyone in the Giants organization. He questioned the team's coaching and didn't provide the most glowing review of Eli Manning.
Eli!
So this is a tweet by Ralph Vecchiano. Odell Beckham also didn't sound pleased with Pat Shurmur's play calling in regards to why he's not having more of an impact this year. Beckham said, I feel like I'm being out-schemed. This is another tweet by Vecchiano. Odell Beckham's overall theme, he's awesome and the Giants are holding him back. I don't think I'm given an opportunity to be the very best I can be. I don't want to be held back anymore. This is a tweet by Albert Breer. Wow, what Odell Beckham said to Josina Anderson, unbelievable. There is an issue at quarterback, huh? I don't know. We all know. Are you unhappy in New York? That's a tough question. Appreciate the honesty, but wow. Lots of bullets flying coming out of that one. So those are the tweets. So Beckham didn't totally skewer Manning. After an odd aside about how Manning isn't a running quarterback, Beckham said his quarterback could still throw it. He then turned his attention to his usage, saying he's been catching shallow routes and wants to go over the top of somebody. You can take that many ways. After being unhappy in New York, Beckham is going to have to deal with that for now. He signed a 5-year, $95 million extension in August that made him the highest paid receiver in football. Beckham was already in hot water with the team prior to Sunday. He had to apologize to the team Saturday after his early comments were released, according to Jay Glazer. So Beckham went on to throw for a touchdown and score one of his own while finishing with 131 yards, receiving on 8 catches in the Giants' 33-31 loss to the Carolina Panthers. Does Odell have a point? Is it time for Eli Manning to be replaced? Right? Believe it or not, I like Eli, but I'm not crazy. And when I see the quarterback position not really balling, I like to evaluate everything. Now, one of the Giants' biggest problems is their offensive line. Their offensive line. Trash. I'm talking about hot trash. And the Giants ain't beating nobody no time soon. Not with that offensive line. Right? I mean, they trash. So right now they're 1-5 on the season. Eli, in 6 games, 1-5, Eli has a 68.7 completion percentage, 1,662 yards. 7.2 yard average, 6 touchdowns, 4 picks. So let's go game by game. So their first game was against Jacksonville. He went 23-37, 62%, 224 yards, no touchdown and a pick, 67.8 quarterback rating, sacked twice. Game 2 against Dallas was a loss. Game 1 was a loss. Game 2 was a loss. Went 33-44, 75% passing percentage, completion percentage rather. Threw for 279 yards, 1 touchdown, had 98.6 quarterback rating, got sacked 6 times. Game 3 was against Houston was a win. He went 25-29, 86.2 completion percentage. 297 yards, 2 touchdowns, no pick, 132 quarterback rating, sacked 4 times. It's a theme in here. Game 4 against New Orleans, which was a loss, he went 31-41, 75.6 completion percentage, 255 yards, 1 touchdown, no pick, 99.1 quarterback rating, 3 sacks. It's that theme again against the Carolina Panthers. He went, which was a loss, you know, 33-31. He went 22-36, 61.1 completion percentage, threw for 326 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks, 86.1 quarterback rating, was sacked 1 time. Game 6 against the Philadelphia Eagles was a loss, 13-34. He went 24-43. 55.8 completion percentage, 281 yards, no touchdown, 1 pick, 66.1 quarterback rating, sacked 4 times. So, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, been sacked 20 times in 6 games already. So, Eli ain't trash. Eli just ain't been good, and the offensive line is horrible. So, it's not all on Eli. Play calling, too, because the plays that they're calling is They're not really. It don't seem like they're really trying to get their receivers into the game like they're supposed to. They're feeding Saquon like it's short pass, underneath pass, short pass, underneath pass, short pass, underneath pass. So Odell do got a point, and they're not really stretching that field and getting that ball down the field like they can with the weapons that they have, because the Giants got the hell of an offense. The worst part of the Giants' offense is the offensive line, which is a problem. Your offensive line can't be the worst part of your offense. Because with the receivers the Giants have, plus Saquon, that's enough to make Eli be okay. Because Eli don't suck stuff. Eli just ain't good, if that makes sense. If it don't, your fault. But I don't think, looking at this, I don't think it's time for Eli to go right now. But the Giants should have drafted a quarterback. Well, no, I'll take that back because they got Saquon. I don't blame them for getting Saquon. Saquon's a fucking amazing. Like, top five running back in the league right now, the way he's playing, right? Davis Webb, they missed on that. That Davis Webb pick, they fucked that one up. So this upcoming draft, the Giants got to get a backup quarterback. They got to get a quarterback who's going to be able to succeed Eli in the future and take the team to the promised land. And if they don't do that, they'll shoot themselves in the foot. Because Eli is definitely on the decline, but it ain't over for him. Eli's still good enough to be a playmaker. So I like to play when you see me in the street saying, yeah. So, I don't think it's time for Eli to go right now. But it is time for them to get a successor for Eli into the building and get that successor groomed and ready to go, because Eli ain't got that much more time. So, remember, you heard that from me, because I said it. All right, so, Pink October. The NFL uses the month of October to bring awareness to breast cancer, even though the NFL got a problem with Colin Kaepernick taking the knee to bring awareness to police brutality against black people. In the NFL is 75% black as far as the players. And a whole lot of the players either don't give a fuck or don't really have the gall to take a stand against that stuff. So I've been watching the games, and I'm like, well, the NFL ain't – I don't see nothing pink out there like that. I see a couple players. I was like, well, let me wait the week three before I say something. Well, the third week in October. So we're on the third week in October, and now I did a little research in the thing, and I found out that the NFL will discontinue its breast cancer awareness initiative after next season. And they did that for 8 years during the month of October when it's pink. So let me read this to you, because I thought that the players refused to wear pink. Well, I was hoping that the players refused to wear pink if they couldn't take a knee. That's what I was hoping, but that's not the case. So this article is saying, since the NFL is moving on from pink in October, instead the league will allow teams to choose their own causes to support in a campaign that will be called A Crucial Catch. So let me read this memo to you, since I get this pop up, by the way. All right, so teams now have a say in the cause they're champion for about 18% of their schedule. They can still choose breast cancer or another detectable, screenable cancer such as prostate or colorectal cancer, or one to which a player or a coach has a personal tie. Teams can also support more than one cancer cause per season, and they can change their choices from one season to the next, similar to My Cause, My Cleats campaign that debuted this year, in which players wore customized cleats to share a message for one game. It's a break from the homogeneity of NFL campaigns in the past. It's a balancing act, Anna Isaacson. That's an interesting last name, Isaacson, the NFL's VP of Social Responsibility, said. We've seen a lot of success in having focused strategic campaigns, focusing on one cause, fundraising for it, bringing it to life, choosing a message, and spreading the word among our fans. We are committed to that, but we're also committed to making sure the voice of our clubs are heard and making sure the voice of our players are heard. The NFL says it has raised in the neighborhood of $15 million for the American Cancer Society in the last 8 years. Though, as Brentis writes, there have been critics at the initiative, including those who consider a PR stunt to gain more female fans. That said, Sharon Bias, the chief marketing and development officer of the ACS, calls the NFL one of the strongest, if not our strongest, partner of American Cancer Society. When it comes to breast cancer awareness. So that clears it up for me. I was hoping that they said, if y'all ain't gonna let us goddamn take no knee, we ain't wearing pink. And that's that. Can't make me wear pink, so I won't wear pink. But that ain't what they said. So they're wearing pink, but they're not wearing pink, because they championing different causes and different cancers and different things that they want to take a stand for that the NFL would allow them to take a stand for. So, yeah, Joseph, you thought they was on some revolutionary, and they ain't. They just on some other stuff, looking at other causes. So that's why, if you've been looking at the league and you've been noticing that they haven't been wearing pink like they do, usually do in October, it's because the NFL chooses to champion other types of cancer causes. Cancers and awareness and bringing money and all those things there. So, yeah, moving on from Pink October. So, in other football news, Nick Bosa, the brother of Joey Bosa, who plays for the San Diego Chargers, is foregoing this season to heal from injury and focus on the NFL draft that's coming up, because there's already talks about him being the best player in the draft. So, and I was listening to some videos up there on YouTube, and they were saying he has sports hernia and he wants to recover from that, not hurt himself even more, and be able to really get ready for the draft. So, you know, he withdrew from school and everything. So, Let's read. Nick Bosa's career at Ohio State is over. The All-American defensive lineman will not return to the team, the school confirmed on Tuesday. They should have said. I didn't write that. Bosa is currently rehabilitating after having surgery due to a core muscle injury sustained on Ohio State's third game of the season against TCU. There was not a timetable for his return. The school said Bosa intends to withdraw from the school to focus on his recovery. I was hopeful that Nick would be able to return to play again for us, Ohio State coach Urban Meyer said in statement. We're going to get back to Urban later. I know this was an extremely difficult and emotional decision for Nick and his family, and I wish them well as he moves on to get himself 100% healthy and ready for his next chapter. I want to thank Nick for his remarkable efforts he gave for this program. He is a first-class young man who we have been honored to coach. The decision by Bosa, whose older brother Joey plays for the Los Angeles Chargers, like I just told y'all, would allow him to focus on the upcoming NFL draft. Entering the season, Bosa was projected as a high first-round pick after recording 13.5 sacks in his first 2 years at Ohio State. He had 4 sacks in his first 3 games this season. He was expected to forego his final season of eligibility even before the injury. The Buckeyes are 7-0 this season and are ranked number 2 in the Amway Coaches Poll. Nick Bosa, you are a baller. And I don't care if somebody don't like you. This is Bigfoot, by the way. I know you Negroes miss me, and I know you Negroes love me, but I don't like you Negroes. I like Nick Bosa. Nick Bosa's a real American man, and I think him sitting out to take care of his injury is appropriate. Why? Because you don't have to worry about collegiate Negroes touching him and sweating on him. I don't know why I decided to come out and talk during this story. I don't know if Nick Bosa supports white supremacy or not. I just decided to rear my ugly head because that's what white supremacists do. We pop up at every now and then, these turns and times and twists. Tell you about how we feel. Troll. Boogity, wiggity, wiggity, wiggity. Boogity wiggity 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 wiggity, you darkies. Boogity wiggity wiggity wiggity. Donald Trump is the man and Kanye West is the man. That's all I really want to come out and say. I am Buford Manigault and I support Kanye West or Kanye West or whatever he says his name is. Boogity wiggity wiggity wiggity. And Donald Trump, I support Donald J. Trump. Boogity wiggity wiggity wiggity. And I'm mad at that rapper T.I. or I.T. or P.I.T. or whatever his name is for his disrespect of Melinda Trump. Boogity wiggity 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 wiggity. Be afraid of us, quiet people, because we don't like you. We keep putting out videos telling you all that we don't like you. Like I said, I have nothing to do with this story about Nick Bosa, because I don't know if he knows anything about real white power. But what I do know is I just took the opportunity to waste some of your time. Boogity wiggity wiggity wiggity. Do something about it. All right? Do something about it. I am Buford Manigault, and I'm out this bitch. Quiet power. Fuck you, Buford. Don't you ever pop up just like that, out the blue like that no more, boy. Get your ass up, boy. Get your goddamn man down, boy. So, and now off-topic shit. This is off-topic like a motherfucker, but it's on-topic. And that's what Buford was, a bridge to more off-topic shit, right? A Tallahassee man, some dumbass boy that lived here in Tallahassee, travels to Chicago to cut off the penis of the ex-girlfriend's new boyfriend, and he also called this initials an old boy leg. And he looked like a little bitch, too. He got his shirt buttoned all the way up with the t-shirt showing. So, a Florida man was arrested after authorities say, and this is our off-topic shit segment, by the way, if you didn't know. And remember, man, y'all can support the Fix Sports Podcast on Patreon by visiting www.patreon.com/fix and become a patron. As low as $1 a month or $1 a creation. A Florida man was arrested after authorities say he cut off the penis of ex-girlfriend's new boyfriend. The rich boy named Justin Foster, he's 28. He's too old for that shit. Of Tallahassee, flew to the Chicago area in August to confront the man who was dating his ex, the Chicago Tribune reports. According to the report, the prosecutors alleged Foster approached the man on the street, hit him in the head with a tire iron, carved his initials into the leg, then cut off his penis. The victim was found somewhere else in the street and taken to the hospital, where officials say he's also suffering from permanent brain damage. That's how hard he hit him in the head. Foster flew back to Tallahassee, where he was arrested on August 27 and brought back to Chicago late last month. After being held with no bond, a judge granted Foster a $1 million bond Thursday, allowing him to be released while awaiting trial. Fuck Foster. That's some dumbass shit. Ain't no Johnny that good. Foster, you a bitch. Foster, must have been the first time he got sex or something. How the hell he found Buddy in Chicago, though? Like, dude had to do some super sneaky investigative stuff. He might have did, like, might have snuck the old girl phone and tracked the iPhone shit, tracked the Snapchat shit. Y'all better turn that location off on your phones. Better turn that goddamn location off on your phone. So, Buddy went to Chicago, found Buddy. When they found him, bust him in the head with a tire iron, carved his initials into his head, into his leg, and then proceeded to cut his meat off. And he ain't had no problem touching that man's meat. The way my brain worked, that's the first question I had. Like, he actually was comfortable with touching another man's meat. Cut it off. But anyway, all that is crazy. Like, the fact that you went through all that work to investigate, find out who Buddy was, find out how you can locate Buddy, pay for a plane ticket to go to Chicago, find Buddy, hit him in the head, carve your initials, cut his meat off, get back on the plane, come back to Tallahassee. Boy, you crazy as fuck. You need your ass whooped. Who raised you? Just come on, man. Come, that's not. Let it go. Let her go. Let her go. Let her go. I ain't gonna lie. If I was dude, after I recover, as much brain function as I got left, I got to find you and I got to kill you and I got to make your family members suffer too. So I might take out some of your family members. That's just how my brain thinks. Right? Like, I got to find you, like, investigate you like you investigated me, find you, kill you, but before I kill you, kill some of your family members and then make you suffer and then kill you. Get that fucked up edge you got, Justin Foster. Boy, you crazy as shit. It's some crazy ass people out here, man. Hey, man, don't be walking around with them headphones in your ear. Don't be walking around with them, you know, not paying attention to your surroundings. Buddy got caught slipping, and wow. So, Justin Foster, well, if y'all ever see Justin Foster, y'all probably won't see him again, but see him online. Remind him how much of a bitch he is. Go through all of that. Because the girl don't mess with him no more. Justin Foster, you's a biatch. And that, my people, is my off-topic shit segment. I told you it was crazy. And it is. Justin fucking Foster. And the F is for fucking crazy. I don't know, man. I don't know where they find these people at. I don't know where they raise these people at. Like, all these women out here in this world. I got to have her. She don't love me no more. So I got to kill her boyfriend because she don't love me no more. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. She don't love me no more. My name is Justin Foster. And I'm a self-ass motherfucker. And my girlfriend don't love me no more. She don't love me no more. She don't love me no more. She don't love me no more. Hello, Justin. Hello. All right, so let's talk about a little college football. Do a little catching up on college football. Week 7 of the college football season. God damn, we in week 7. God damn. So, South Florida, who's number 21 on the, is number, ranked number 21, they beat Tulsa 25-24. Indiana lost to Iowa 42-16. Iowa's ranked number 19. Number 2, Ohio State took care of business 30-14 over Minnesota. Number 11, ooh, Florida Gators are number 11. I know the Seminole fans mad at this. Seminole fans got to be eating their heart out there. The Florida Gators are ranked number 11, and they beat Vanderbilt 37-27. Pittsburgh fell to number 4, Notre Dame 14-19. Number 18, Penn State fell to number 24, Michigan State 21-17. Number 7, Texas. Texas is number 7. Beat number 17, Baylor. Number 17, Texas A&M beat number they beat South Carolina 26-23. I know Florida State fans, once again, got to be eating your heart out because Jimbo Fisher got number 17 ranked team in the nation, and y'all ranked like 100 and something. Who knows? Number 8, Georgia fell to number 5, LSU 36-16, something I did not expect to see. Number 12, Washington beat number 12. Washington fell to number 12, Oregon. Oregon number 12? Damn, 27-30. Number 10, UCF beat Memphis 31-30, which had to be a hell of a game. Number 13, West Virginia fell to Iowa State 30-14. Can't lose Iowa State. Alabama took care of business over Missouri as usual, 39-10. Number 6, Michigan beat number 23, Wisconsin 38-13. FIU beat Middle Tennessee State 24-21. Mississippi, Ole Miss beat Arkansas 37-33. Hawaii lost to BYU 49-23. Fresno State lost to Wyoming, or they beat Wyoming rather, 27-3. Colorado lost to USC 31-20. And Boise State lost to Nevada, or Boise State beat Nevada rather, 31-27. So, You know. I had a week 8 when it come, but that's. I wish I could go more in depth, but I didn't really watch the game, so I don't want to see him fabricating on stuff, so I could just give you the scores and stuff. Because I didn't get a chance to watch the games because my goddamn cable was out, man. So, you know, I'm mad about that shit, though, man. But I had to give y'all a little update on what went down in that college football week south. So, the MLB playoff race is in the championship series, like I've been telling y'all. You know, we've been talking a little bit about the baseball these last couple shows, right? And then the championship series race, you know, the AL championship series, then the NL championship series. So, it's time to get abreast on these series and see what's going on. You know what I'm talking about? So, I got the NLCS and the ALCS. So, in NLCS, game one, the Brewers beat the Dodgers 5-6. Game two, the Dodgers beat the Brewers 4-3. So, that's 1-1. Series tied 1-1. In the ALCS, game one, the Astros beat the Red Sox 7-2. Then game two, the Red Sox beat the Astros 7-5. So, that series is 1-1 after two games. Game three, the NLCS, the Brewers beat the Dodgers 4-0. Game 3 of the ALCS, the Red Sox beat the Astros 8-2. Game 4 of the NLCS, the Dodgers beat the Brewers 2-1. And Game 5 of the NLCS, the Dodgers beat the Brewers 5-2. So the Dodgers are up 3-2. Game 4 in the ALCS, the Red Sox beat the Astros 8-6. And Red Sox have taken a 3-1 lead. And that's where they are now in the ALCS. So right now in the NLDS, in the NLCS rather, going into game six, the Dodgers have a 3-2 lead. And that'll be tomorrow at 8:39. And not right now, excuse me, but the ALCS, well, yeah, it's happening now. So game five, Boston is up. Boston has a 3-1 lead in the series, and Boston has a 1-0 lead in the game in the bottom of the fourth. So, but by the time you hear this, it won't be actually like that. So, yeah. So that is where we are in the baseball playoffs. And, you know, I ain't gonna really, really, really get excited to the World Series. But, yeah. I'm not big into watching baseball. I do like to keep up with it, but not big into really watching baseball like that. You hear me? All right. Basketball is back. The 2018 NBA season has kicked off, and damn, they didn't give us time to miss. I think they ended in May, June, July, August, September, October. So, yeah, they didn't really give us too much time to miss. But nevertheless, the NBA is back. Teams have reloaded, regeared up, and it's time to motherfucking play. See who's going to make it to the motherfucking end. So, the season kicked off with the 76ers over the Celtics, and the Celtics look good. Kyrie Irving didn't play that well. Gordon Hayward didn't play the greatest, but Celtics still look good, and they beat the 76ers 105-87. And I said Kyrie Irving didn't play well, but Celtics look good. Celtics got pieces. Jason Tatum, a baller. Gordon Hayward, I think he's pretty much back, so he's getting used to his role as a third option. You got Kyrie, you got Scary Terry Rozier, you got Al Horford, you got Baines, you got Marcus Smart, you got all them other boys. I haven't forgot their names right now, but Celtics look good. So look at Celtics in the 70. You know, the 76ers, Celtics, and the Toronto Raptors are looking at the three teams that's looking to come out of the East. So, you know, look at that. Out of the West, the Warriors beat the Russell Westbrook-less Thunders 108-100. And after that game, somebody asked Kevin Durant about, you know, playing close games. And Kevin Durant was saying to expect the Warriors to win a lot of close games this season. I ain't buying that. I think it was just, you know, stuff to motivate them. I ain't buying the Warriors having a lot of close games this season, especially when they get Cousins back and get him fully integrated into the mix. So that was opening night of NBA, which was Tuesday. So, on Wednesday night, the Milwaukee Bucks beat the Charlotte Hornets 113-112. The Miami Heat lost to the Orlando Magic 101-104. Indiana Pacers beat the Memphis Grizzlies 111-83. The Detroit Pistons beat the Brooklyn Nets 103-100. The Toronto Raptors beat the Cleveland Cavaliers 116-104. The New York Knicks beat the Atlanta Hawks 126-107. Goddamn. The Pelicans beat the Rockets 131-112. So the Pelicans look good, too. Pelicans did look good. I saw a little bit of that game. Pelicans did look good. Spurs beat the Timberwolves 112-108. The Suns beat the Mavericks 121-100. Jazz beat the Kings 123-117. Nuggets beat the Clippers 107-98. And then, you know, you got the Bulls. Bulls and 76ers. Heat Wizards and the Lakers and Trailblazers. And I'll be able to give you more updates about them on Monday's show. So that's the update of where we at in the NBA. So, Aaron Hernandez. The man is dead, but he's still in the goddamn news. And the Boston Globe is doing an investigative story on Aaron Hernandez. So we get to learn a little bit. It seems like they're doing a six-part series on him or something like that. It says part four of six, Murder, A Killer in the Huddle. It's by the Spotlight team on the Boston Globe. The series was reported by Bob Holler, Beth Healy, Sasha Pfeiffer, Andrew Ryan, and the editor, Patricia Wynn. Today's story was written by Hoya. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm just giving you some insight on what they're talking about Aaron Hernandez, because there's a whole bunch of stories going in. Because, you know, I tune in to the news and to the different realms of sports to get, you know, updates, news, and things that's going on. Now, here, Aaron Hernandez had a homosexual past. Aaron Hernandez was sleeping with people. Brandon Lloyd said Aaron Hernandez was this, and somebody said Aaron Hernandez was that. Not saying Aaron, Brandon Lloyd said anything bad, but basically it's like Aaron Hernandez had a real traumatic childhood, was molested. Apparently he was like down low gay guy. You know, they call him trades now. So he was, you know, out in front and open. In front of everybody, he liked women, but behind closed doors, having sex with teammates and other people like that, right? So Aaron Hernandez spent only about 10 minutes inside the Cure Lounge that evening in July 2012, just enough time to down two drinks. Not early enough, not nearly enough time for most people to get into trouble. But something happened in that flashy basement dance club around 12:30 a.m. Something that got under Hernandez's skin. Prosecutors later said that a patron named Daniel D. Abreu inadvertently bumped Aaron Hernandez, causing a drink to spill on him. The two men have never met, but the patron star tight end allegedly felt disrespect. It wasn't really a surprise by his own account. Hernandez often become highly strung and jumpy at clubs, convinced that people wanted to try him or physically challenge him. And he had a history of taking offense to small things. At 17, he punched the bar manager in a dispute over a $12 tab. This time, the outcome would be far worse than a sucker punch to the head. 2 hours later, at about 2:30 a.m., Hernandez and his hometown pal, Alexander Bradley, pulled up in a silver SUV next to a car occupied by the Abreu and Sofrero Fruit. I can't say that last name. Near the edge of the theater district. The two men, military veterans from Cape Verde, had no criminal records. They had come to Boston seeking better lives. Witnesses testified that someone in Hernandez's car shouted at the men, "What's up now?" and screamed a racial epithet before firing five shots, killing them both. Like some hoes. To the public, Aaron Hernandez was a rising star, only 22 years old and weeks away from signing one of the richest football contracts ever for an NFL tight end. And he just thought shit just wasn't going to catch up with him. That'd be crazy. That's why they keep talking about him, because he's crazy. But July 16, 2012 marked a turning point in his life as the chasm widened between his celebrity image and the brutal reality of his life. Hernandez and his companion that evening, his personal assistant and drug supplier Bradley, each claimed the other fired the shots, and the jury would later find Hernandez not guilty of the crime. But if Hernandez didn't kill the men himself, he was at the scene of an execution, and he provided a getaway car. Hernandez would become a hunted man. He was no longer just indulging paranoid fantasies. As he and his co-conspirator Bradley turned on each other, somebody really wants to get him to get out. Somebody really was out to get him. Right? Yeah. Boston homicide detective swiftly determined that the two dead men, De Abreu and the other name I can't pronounce, Furtado, had been at Cure, and when the detectives reviewed surveillance footage from the club entryway, they spotted a familiar figure in the crowd, Hernandez. Sergeant Mark Sullivan, he picked him right off the bat. Detective Paul McIsaac, Detective Paul McIsaac said in an interview, he walked in with our victims at the same time, no interaction. He went downstairs. 9 to 10 minutes later, he came out and left, and that was the end of that. Initially, police thought Hernandez's presence was just a coincidence. They concentrated instead on finding the SUV involved in the attack, which had gone missing. In fact, Hernandez had a silver SUV, a loaner from a car dealer in exchange for promotional help stashed in his cousin's garage. As the victims' families prepared to bury them side by side in the Boston Cemetery, Hernandez parted on. He was spotted within days of the murders riding jet skis with a bunch of Bristol, Connecticut friends, including two ex-convicts in the posh harbor town of Newport, Rhode Island. The same month of July, he reported for training camp in Foxborough, but the 2012 season would prove to be a disappointment as Hernandez failed to live up to the grand expectations of the $41 million contract he signed 2 weeks before the opening game. First, he missed 6 games with an ankle injury. Then, no sooner had he returned to action, he tore a shoulder labrum in the game against the Miami Dolphins. He played hurt the final 6 games of the season, including the last of his career, a 28-13 loss to Baltimore in the conference championship game in January 2013. Fuck you, Hernandez. Fuck you. All in all, it was a lost season, by far the worst of his 3 years with the Patriots. A week later, Hernandez and Bradley were partying again at Cure, as if that drive-by shooting had not happened on the summer night 6 months earlier. Driving away, Bradley was behind the wheel at 2:20 a.m. when they were clocked traveling 105 miles an hour on the Southeast Expressway, according to a state trooper's report the Globe obtained. A brief wild chase through traffic ensued before the trooper pulled them over. The report states Bradley was wobbly drunk. Hernandez said, "Trooper, I am Aaron Hernandez. It's okay." Once before, the ploy had worked for Hernandez, but this time it was not okay. Bradley was arrested and charged with DUI. The new year was off to a rocky start for the pair, and it was about to get much worse. A few weeks later in February, Hernandez and Bradley flew to Florida to party with one of his Florida Gator teammates, Deontay Thompson. But by the time Hernandez arrived in Belgrade, Thompson's hardscrabble hometown, his paranoia was rising. Despite all of his money and fame, not to mention a new baby and impending marriage, Hernandez couldn't seem to relax and enjoy any of it. The pressure was getting to him. The party started at a nightclub in Belgrade and lasted days. From Belgrade, Hernandez, Bradley, and Thompson buddies hit a Miami strip club named Tootsie's, where Hernandez ran up $10,000 in charges the first night. As they parted in the VIP section, Hernandez grew nervous about it. Two older men who were seated across from them rarely moved. Bradley later recalled Hernandez was certain they were police, possibly from Boston. Bradley recalled telling his friend that the plainclothes men were probably tracking them because of their shared secret, the double murder. Hernandez's anxiety spiked. Tensions between Hernandez and Bradley were escalating too. On the second night at Tootsie's, they bickered. Bradley said they fought about the bar bill, but then about a forgotten cell phone. When the party ended, they drove north to Interstate 95, wrangling. The wrangling stopped, and Bradley fell asleep. He later testified that he woke up with a gun at my face right between my eyebrows. Now he's telling everything. As the sun rose the next morning, police found Bradley lying in the parking lot, bleeding from the bullet hole between his eyes. Oh, man, he's lucky to be alive. Hernandez was gone. He had flown out of Florida, believing he was carrying less baggage than when he arrived. He believed he had seen the last of Bradley. Then his phone rang. The caller's number appeared to be Bradley. Hernandez thinks he's dead, said McIsaac, the homicide detective. Now he's getting a call from a ghost. Bradley had survived, though he lost his right eye and needed multiple surgeries. He refused to cooperate with the police, and investigators failed to tie Hernandez to Bradley's shooting. Wow. So there's a lot more to this, and it's in the Boston Globe, and it's a 6-part series, A Killer in the Hub. part 4 of 6 of Murder, A Killer in the Huddle. So Aaron Hernandez and Football Inc. So Aaron Hernandez was crazy. That's why they keep talking about it. But they don't have to talk about that man's sexuality and all that stuff. You ain't have to go into all that stuff. I ain't taking up for him. I'm just saying. Some of that stuff, he did now. Dragging the man's name through the mud not going to make it work or make it up. So. Move on to some boxing, y'all. Boxing. And Sunday, I have an NHL update for y'all, too, because hockey back, too. Hockey. So, Terrence Crawford knocks out Jose Benavidez in the 12th round. He got TKO in the 12th round to retain his title. So, as welterweight world title holder Terrence Crawford continues to take the trash talk this thing and knock out threats from Jose Benavidez Jr., he had one constant response, wait for the fight, and he would shut him up. Let me read that again. As welterweight world title holder Terrence Crawford continued to take the trash talk this thing and knock out threats from Jose Benavidez Jr., okay, I read that right. He had one constant response, wait for the fight, and he would shut him up. That's just what Crawford did in this style. As he outclassed Benavidez before scoring a violent 12th-round knockout to retain his 147-pound title for the first time before a raucous crowd of 13,323 on Saturday at the CHI Health Center in Crawford's hometown. The crowd was the largest Crawford has drawn to date, and he gave the hometown fans a show. After dominating virtually the entire fight against the opponent who simply would not or could not throw many punches, Crawford knocked Benavidez down with a thunderous right uppercut with about 45 seconds left in the fight. He battered him until referee Celestino Ruiz stepped in to wave off the fight with 2 minutes 42 seconds as the crowd went wild. I did what I said I was going to do. That's all that needs to be said, said Crawford, who stuck to his pre-fight promise to not shake Benavidez's hand after the fight. The knockout was coming. It was just a matter of time. He slowed down tremendously. He was tired, and once he slowed down, I could catch him with the uppercut. It feels so good to shut somebody up who's been talking for so long. I'm at ease. The knockout capped an outstanding performance from Crawford, regarded as one of boxing's pound-for-pound best fighters in the world. I told Benavidez he was going to get his ass kicked, and that's what Bud did, said Brian McIntyre, Crawford's trainer and manager. The bad blood between Crawford, who was making the first defense of the welterweight title he won on June 9th by one-sided ninth-round beatdown of Jeff Horn, and Benavidez was deep heading into the fight. Benavidez relentlessly called Crawford out, including during a run-in at a weigh-in in February in Corpus Christi, Texas, until he finally got the fight and they traded harsh words throughout the promotion. It spilled over at Friday's weigh-in with Benavidez shoving Crawford, who took his swing at Benavidez but missed. When it came time for the real fight, however, he landed plenty of clean, hard punches and finished Benavidez impressively. Most fighters today in that position having clearly won the fight, would back off in the 12th round, not taking the chances and run out the clock. Not him. Top-ranked promoter Bob Arum said he's a performer. He wanted to close the show, and that's what he did, and that makes him special. Look at what we have with our fight with other fighters today. That is not the mindset of most of them. But Terrence is a showman. He wants to make a statement. We know he's a brilliant fighter, but to be so crowd-pleasing makes him special. Next year, when he moves into the pay-per-view arena, people will remember that and want to see him fight because he's so entertaining. Two-time Fighter of the Year Crawford, who is now 34-0 with 25 knockouts at the age of 31, has also been a champion at lightweight and junior lightweight. He began the fight working his jab and going to the body with it before switching to a southpaw stance about halfway through the round, as he often does, and he stayed that way for most of the rest of the fight. Benavidez, meanwhile, barely threw any punches. He looked like he wanted to set up a right hand, but could never find a clean home for it. Crawford landed to the body in the second round and made Benavidez take a step back and shake his head. He did that several times in the fight. Crawford picked up the pace in the third round, repeatedly landed combinations to the head and body, and again forcing Benavidez to take a step back. The body shots were key, said Crawford, who earned $3.625 million to Benavidez's $500,000. Ha ha, that takes something out of you every time, he said. That's what slowed him down. You could tell every time he was shaking his head, I knew it was taking its toll on him in the later round. Benavidez had a strong fourth round, his best of the fight, and landed several clean blows. A strong left hand to the head caught Crawford, and he stuck his tongue out. But Benavidez, who was 27-1 with 18 knockouts at the age of 26, of Phoenix, fought only in spurts. In the fifth round, for example, he spent a long stretch planted. I lost the place off. He spent a long stretch. He landed clean blows and a strong left hand to the. He spent a long stretch planted in the middle of the ring as Crawford went after him and landed a chopping right hand to the head before forcing him back as the round came to an end. After Crawford stunned Benavidez with a flurry of punches early in the ninth round, a seemingly dejected Benavidez went back to the ropes and mentioned for Crawford to come at him. He did and landed some more punches. He continued to land combinations to the head and body while Benavidez rarely got off more than one punch at a time. With Benavidez fading in the final round, Crawford tagged him with a hellacious uppercut that knocked him down. He surprised the man to his feet and continued, but Crawford went right at him and blasted him with a pair of right hands, and Ruiz stopped it as Benavidez was falling to the canvas again. Yeah, he was rocking the shit out of his ass. Crawford led 110-99, 108-101, and 107-102 going into the 12th round, and Benavidez talking about, I felt like I was winning. Nah, bitch, you weren't winning. I gave a hell of a fight to the best fighter in the world. He got me, Benavidez said. This is boxing. It happens. He's a great fighter, but I'm a great fighter, too. We have the fans. We gave the fans a great show. He beat me. I don't have anything bad to say. I don't want to make any excuses, but my right leg, where he was shot in 2016, started hurting after the seventh round. The doctor said I was never going to walk again, but I gave a hell of a fight to the best fighter in the world. I'm going to train even harder, come back strong. According to the Comfy Box, Crawford landed 186 of 579 punches, 32%, while Benavidez connected with only 92 of 501, which is 18%. Benavidez landed double-digit punches in only three rounds. A lot of people say, oh, I'm little, I don't punch hard, just like he was saying all week. But once you get in there and feel my power, he wasn't itching to come inside, Crawford said. And that's true. If you look at the fight, that's true. Crawford said, when you look at it, Jeff Horn was supposed to be the bigger guy. Julius Ndongo was supposed to be the bigger guy. When we get in the ring, it's different. I'm strong for the division. The division has other top fighters, namely title holders Errol Spence Jr., Sean Porter, and Keith Thurman, not to mention former titleist Danny Garcia, but they all fight at Al Haymon's Premier Boxing Champions, which is aligned with Showtime and Fox. Crawford and Top Rank are exclusive to ESPN. Making those fights will prove complicated if they ever happen, but Crawford continues to say he wants them, and Aaron dismissing all others but Spence. He said he's ready to sit down with Haymon and make that fight as soon as possible. They need to go ahead and make that happen. We want to see that Errol Spence and Terrence Crawford. So let's go ahead and do that. Let's do that. Let's do that. Let's do that. Shake that booty. Let's do that. Let's do that. Shake that booty. All right, so. As I said in the opening, ESPN analyst Paul Feinbaum, who's, SEC Network is his thing, he thinks that this is Urban Meyer's last season with Ohio State, and Urban Meyer will leave Ohio State because of health issues. So it's, the headline is Paul Feinbaum says Urban Meyer's time coming to an end with Ohio State. Ohio State Buckeyes coach Urban Meyer lived through the scandal involving one of his assistants, Zach Smith, who allegedly abused his ex-wife, even though it seemed like he was going to be fired because of it. Meyer served his three-game suspension, and now he's on the sideline coaching one of the best teams in the country. However, on Wednesday, when he joined ESPN's Get Up, college football analyst prime Paul Feinbaum says he thinks Meyer will be leaving Columbus very, very, very soon. I sense his time is coming to an end at Ohio State, Feinbaum said. This is observation. I'm watching him. Don't forget the month of August is one of the worst months ever. It's one of his worst months ever. I still feel like it's a bad marriage. We're hearing him talk about his health. Most coaches don't talk about their health issues unless it's a very serious situation. I think this is a precursor to him walking away at the end of the season, much like he did 6 or 7 years ago at the University of Florida. Feinbaum babbles as a fool, bomb bomb Bibles, and is full of bluff, of boaster, but his reasoning makes a lot of sense. Meyer did leave Florida because of health, even though that program was still rolling, and anytime health is brought to the surface, it usually means the end is near. Fact of that, with everything that has gone on over the past few months, why wouldn't he leave? Meyer obviously wants to get out, to go out on his own terms, and one last hurrah on the sidelines with a good team may be enough for him to walk away. So, I mean, I don't know. I have to look more into it. I haven't paid attention to it. So, but I'm sure Paul Feinbaum has been paying more attention to that than me. So, Urban Meyer might be dipping on Ohio State after this year, especially. But, you know, Urban Meyer, you know, he has a past of doing stuff like that, especially when things aren't going the way they're supposed to go. You know, Urban Meyer would dip. He's a liar, Urban. We know Urban Meyer is a liar. If you lie, you cheat. If you cheat, you steal. If you steal, you kill. You know how old black folks say. So, he lied. So, if he lie, he'll cheat. If he cheat, he'll steal. If he steal, he'll kill. And he will dip on your ass if things ain't going the way they're supposed to go. So, Urban Meyer might be out at Ohio State after this year. We don't know. You'll keep an eye on that. But according to old Colter Sack, to young Colter Sack, Paul Feinbaum, it just might be. We're going to keep an eye on that. We're going to keep an eye on Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer. Bon. I got my harmonica. Why I'm making any noise with my damn mouth? And I got my goddamn harmonica right here. Come on, come on. It is tied for our Friday rant, and our rant is going to be aimed at the 49ers who apologize for leaving Kaepernick out of photos from the gallery. Let me read this before I go off on their soft asses, right? San Francisco 49ers are apologizing for initially leaving Colin Kaepernick out of a photo gallery celebrating the team's history against the Green Bay Packers. The team posted dozens of photos on its website of past games against the Packers before the teams meet again Monday night, without the first including any of Kaepernick. And I missed that game because what? My table. The team later added photos of Kaepernick. This is the first photo gallery the team has run this year, but pictures of Kaepernick were included in all seven photo galleries posted on the team's website last year. Unfortunately, there were a handful of obvious misses in this gallery posted by our website team, and we appreciate them being brought to our attention, the team said in a statement. Yeah, okay. 49ers organization has tremendous respect and gratitude for the contribution Colin made by our team over the years, so much that we cut him and still don't refuse to give him a job, even though we need a quarterback bad because our backup quarterback ain't good and our starting quarterback is hurt. And even though our starting quarterback ended the same year, even last year with the same type of stats that Colin ended the year before that, we really love and respect him even though we cut him and want to give him a job. Kaepernick set an NFL record for quarterbacks by rushing for 181 yards in a playoff game. In a playoff win against the Packers in January 2013, threw for 413 yards in the season opening win against the Packers in 2013, led a winning drive to win the playoff game in Green Bay in 2014, but they just conveniently forgot that shit, though, right? We have fun memories of those games that should have been displayed on our website, the team said. The oversight does not properly reflect the appreciation our ownership has for Colin. Stop saying that. Stop saying y'all have appreciation for Colin. You don't. Stop lying, fucking San Francisco. You're trying to cover your ass because somebody called you out for leaving the man off the shit, and you're just trying to cover your ass. Stop it. Stop saying you have goddamn respect and appreciation for somebody who you cut, not because he couldn't cut the mustard, but you cut him because of the kneeling. You couldn't have cut Colin because he wasn't good enough. Because Colin's stats, if you look at the stats, he ended that last season with San Francisco. And I said it before, his stats, those last five games, compared his last five games with San Francisco, Jimmy Garoppolo's last five games with San Francisco last year, ain't much different. Garoppolo got a heavy-ass contract. Colin Kaepernick got cut. couldn't have got cut for his play, because the same type of numbers got Garoppolo a hell of a lot of money. So I'm just saying, man, then you lead a man, you accidentally lead a man out of the photo gallery against the Packers. It ain't like the San Francisco 49ers have gotten a whole lot of wins against the Packers over the years. It ain't like San Francisco 49ers just been balling over the years. You know, they had their spurt. They had their spurt with Jim Harbaugh and that good defense and things like that. But those are days of the past. 49ers thought that was going to be good this year, but not necessarily. And then Garoppolo got hurt, so there it is. But I want them to stop fucking lying, though, man. Y'all intentionally did that shit. Come on, man. Y'all a pro football team, man. Y'all know what the fuck happened against the Packers. Y'all got access to all that information. And you forgot. Man, stop that bullshit. See, we got people be apologizing after they get caught fucking up. Notice they didn't like find it. They said, oh, somebody brought it to our attention, man. Whatever. San Francisco, stop with the bullshit. Stop with the bullshit, San Francisco. Y'all being some hoes on this shit. Y'all know y'all don't. And then you want to act like y'all really fuck with Colin in this. Y'all don't really fuck with Colin. If you fuck with Colin, he would be on your roster because your asses need a quarterback. Your ass need a quarterback bad. That backup quarterback ain't talking about nothing. Your asses need a quarterback. So if you really appreciate it and care for Colin, he'd be on your roster. He ain't on your roster. You don't care. You intentionally stop lying. You intentionally left that man out of the photo gap. San Francisco 49ers, y'all some holes for this. Whole holes out here for that. Right? Trying to act like motherfuckers is stupid. People are always very sorry when they get caught. They ain't sorry before they get caught, but they sorry when they get caught. Not before they get caught, but when they get caught. Yeah, San Francisco. Yeah. I hope y'all lose the rest of the games this season for this bullshit. That's some whole shit. We apologize. We greatly appreciate you bringing it to our attention. Even though we did it intentionally, because we don't really fuck with Colin. If so, Colin would be on our team. We wouldn't have never cut him if we really fuck with him. San Francisco, y'all full of shit. Y'all, since you got Garoppolo, you haven't had a quarterback who's halfway as good as Colin. Stop that bullshit. Stop with the bullshit, San Francisco 49ers. Y'all some hoes, and y'all shouldn't have been doing it. But you did it anyway, and that's what hoes do. And that's what hoes are for. Keep smiling. Keep laughing. Know that y'all some hoes up in this world. You too, John Lynch. That's what hoes are for. Oh, shit. That's what hoes do. Hoes do whole shit. And that's what San Francisco did, some whole shit. When they act like they didn't intentionally do it when they know they did. Fuck y'all. Hey, man, this is the Fix Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Joseph Ward. And remember, y'all can go to Patreon to support The Fix. www.patreon.com/TheFix. If you really, really, really did what we got going on, want to be a part of us getting better and expanding, becoming a real resource in the community, taking sports talk from a black perspective to the next level. Holla at your homeboy, Joseph Ward, on Patreon, www.patreon.com. Remember, go to the Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Support On the Shoulders of Giants at www.ontheshouldersofgiants.com. www.ontheshoulders1.com, as well as www.ontheshoulders.org. Hey, man, we out here. We doing our thing. This is the Fix Sports Podcast. This is episode 9. I am Joseph Ward. Two fingers in the air like a player and tell them that I out here. Yeah. And I know and I don't know. I'm just saying stuff for my mouth.
I call the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
I was gonna rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and Michigan, most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Nassau. There's no one that can.